morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Oh, wait a minute. That's Tom Tabak snoring because he's late again. But we've never rat out Tom on the air. Good morning, folks.
No, we would never do that.
We would never embarrass the owner of the station. We got Democratic Perspective here. We're going to talk about what's on a lot of people's minds here. We're going to talk about the blue wave and whether it was a blue wave.
Yeah.
Or the blue tsunami, and the way it looks like, and certainly in Southern California. But we're also going to talk about the political divide. We're going to talk about that, and we can't talk about the political divide in this country, which is deep. And I got some anecdotes here, without talking about social media, without talking about the explosive New York Times article on Facebook when you got Zuckerberg running around saying, "Hey, we'll fix it, no problem, we'll fix it."
It's a really hard problem to fix. I mean,
somebody who
worked and designed websites for a long time.
Call Steve because the government should take over Facebook. I mean, it's too big. We've never had anything like it. See, as a liberal, you can't even begin to infringe on free speech. You can't even think about it. Go ahead.
So what we wanted to do, you know, last Monday we had an update on the election, and the election results last Monday looked very much better than election night.
Right.
And now, almost two weeks after the election, Katie Hobbs has run the position of Secretary of State. We have four women in, Democratic women elected to statewide office, right, Mike? We have Kathy Hoffman, who's going to be the superintendent of schools.
31-year-old former teacher, the superintendent of schools. This is very cool.
Yeah, we have, folks, if you're interested in Katie, we have two interviews with her on back in our archives, and also with Kathy Hoffman. Both of them won. Kyrsten Sinema, I think we interviewed Kyrsten way back 7 years ago when we started.
We did.
She won senator. Our old congressional representative, Ann Kirkpatrick, who was our first interview, our first program on Democratic Perspective, moved to the Tucson area, to the area east of Tucson, and she won. So the Democrats picked up one congressional seat in Arizona. They picked up a Senate seat. They picked up three statewide offices, right? Sandra Kennedy, who've been on the show many times, won Corporation Commission. She got more votes than either Republican.
Yep.
And we have the two other offices. So
it's 5-4.
It is the best election. I've been here since 2003, Mike. This is the best election in Arizona that I've seen.
It's five Democrats, four Republicans. So we have, out of our nine representatives in Congress, in the House, we have a majority of Democrats. And it's hard to believe in Arizona.
And we were talking before the show, and when I was young, when I was 18 years old in California, visiting, going to school in California,
oh, yes.
Orange County was solidly red. The idea that it would ever have a Democratic representation is bizarre. And what happened, Mike?
Please, folks, go look at the map. The map online is of Orange County is amazing. Two years ago, the map was red. Got completely red. This year, it's completely blue. When I got notes in my notes here, it says tsunami. If there was a blue tsunami, it was in Orange County, California. This is Reagan country. This is Republican stronghold, and it's all blue. The last race was decided yesterday.
Klaus Van Suderheim is here, and he spends half his time up in Montana, and half his time here in Arizona. How did things go in Montana, Klaus? Because that's something that I don't think most people in Arizona know. You had a good senator named John Tester. He's a soybean farmer.
He's a farmer. I'm not sure if it's soybeans. Well, good morning, everybody. It must be winter, right? The crowd is back. it was an exciting race. Trump had made a special enemy out of John Tester, or vice versa, because Tester opposed his nomination for Surgeon General, and Trump vowed that he would out-test her, came to Montana four times, and lost. There was a great caricature in the local paper that showed Tester with a T-shirt saying, "I went to Montana four times, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt." And the bottom line is that Montanans can tell the real thing. He had a, you know, what was a really a weak opponent. The guy was a recent, had moved to Montana recently. He had been a real estate developer, and Tester, with his seven fingers and his farm and his belly and his booming voice, was clearly the real thing, and that's what Montanan realized. It didn't look that good election night. We all went to sleep at 2 o'clock, very depressed, and we woke up at 10 o'clock in the morning, absolutely elated. It was a wonderful victory, and he's going to be an important voice in Congress.
That happened here too in Clausen, Arizona, is that it looked like Katie Hobbs was going to lose. It looked like Kathy Hoffman. It didn't look like Sandra Kennedy was way behind. So election night until very late, the news was almost as bad as Montana, and it just, once the votes really got counted, the thing turned around.
Well, that's so. Once the votes got counted, the Montana story is a story that is repeated nationwide, and that is the Trump selected districts lost, you know, over 70%. This, you know, which is certainly gratifying to the rest of us that the country isn't that stupid.
I think the other thing, Mike, is that Tester really stood out and stopped this incompetent, unprepared doctor from being head of the VA, which is probably one of the largest organizations in the United States, had no experience managing anything. He was just somebody that Trump liked who happened to be the White House doctor. And Tester went out, I mean, he went right out and stopped the guy from being nominated. And Trump, I don't think he'll ever forgive him for that.
Loyalty over reason is certainly the hallmark of the Trump administration. Loyalty over reason.
Yeah. And which, if you know him, this is typical of Tester. He'll do what's right, and even at political risk. And he did it then, and the state went with him.
They reward him for it. Exactly. He is an outspoken guy. I'm on his mailing list. I get his stuff. He's an outspoken guy and is great. He, like I said, the state rewards him for being a Montanan and being the way he is.
Now, the other question we wanted to talk about today, and Gary LeMaster is going to be calling in a few minutes, and we'll talk with Gary. First, we'll ask him what happened in Minnesota, which I actually don't know very well, but I think it went well. The other thing we wanted to talk about is a question of whether the U.S. is in a state of perpetual minority rule. In other words, when you look at the votes, Democrats will say get 10 million votes collectively more than Republicans for the Senate, so forth and so on, and yet the Republicans will dominate the Senate. And the Electoral College has failed the actual vote, the Democratic vote of the country, twice now. Both times, Mike, in favor of Republicans.
And what Steve, what you're describing is this deep, deep, deep political divide, crazier and more violent, and I use that word cautiously, than anything we have seen as in a political divide, because of the kinds of things that you're talking about. One of the outcomes of this is this violent political divide where you have, I want to talk about here in Yavapai County, we got one of the other things we want to talk about today is results of the election through the eyes of the Yavapai County Chair. Tony Dennis sent out some great information analyzing local
information. Why don't you tell us what Tony sent out, Mike?
And then we'll talk about the blue wave, the blue tsunami that did happen, at least. So we want to mention that a lot of people, a week after the election, Tony says, we know better that the blue wave did happen. That we're talking 77-point 6% of people voted in Yavapai County, the biggest number we've ever had. We were thrilled when you and I were in Democrats at the Red Rocks, at least on the board, you know, when we had 60% and we were partying because it was, we finally got it, you know, out of the 50s.
More people vote, Mike, I think, tends to be more Democratic victories. It's just how it
works. Oh, absolutely. The people
What was the turnout?
77.6%. People are tired of hearing me say, it's a great meme going around Facebook, going around social media, at 55% turnout, Republicans win. At 60% turnout, Democrats win. At 65% turnout, Democrats win in a walk. And this is just turnout. Doesn't matter who's who or what's what. This is what we had in 2008. We had 65% turnout. Barack Obama won in a walk. The meme goes further. It says 70% turnout. If 70% of the people who are, forget about registering Latinos or anything else, 70% of the registered voters vote, the Republican Party has history. If they voted consistently, the Republican Party wouldn't be what they are.
They're saying that the Republican Party now, Mike, is and Klaus, is sort of history in California. They've lost. I think they. What do they have? I don't have in front of me the number of congressional representatives in California. I think that the Republicans are down to a handful of representatives, and there are a couple of dozen Democrats. Some guys who really were really glad to see go from politics are what's the guy's name, Mike, who loves Putin and Russia, who's been in office for like decades, and Rothenbacher or something.
I want to get
like
back
that,
to the county. David Brill's run for Congress brought in 33.4% of the vote. Kyrsten Sinema gained 37% in Yavapai County. Sinema won by 39,000 votes. And 40,000 of votes for Sinema came from Yavapai County. So Yavapai County is claiming as the reason for Sinema's victory. I mean, that's a little bit of a stretch.
But Mike,
sort of
the
joke.
Thing I'm seeing is that whether the results are good in Yavapai or elsewhere, left with a very much divided government.
This happens a lot. In other words, this happened with Janet and Palatano. It happens often with Democrats when the rest of the state is so divided down the middle that if you get a Republican stronghold like Yavapai County, the number of votes you get for Democrats here has impact statewide, which is one of the reasons we had people working here. We had paid organizers here. We had working with our locals.
And we had Kathy Rutherford, who was the best
we
organizer
Kathy Rutherford.
I've
we
ever
had
seen.
Her, we had Leah Hammond. We had the nice young
so we
man.
We could shout out to all those people who did organizational work, who went door to door. I think it was very positive for most of those folks.
The other takeaway for Democrats here, at least on Democratic perspective this morning, we talked about Montana, we're going to talk about Minnesota because we have guests that know about such things. But since Congressional District 4, the district that we are in the federal government, the House of Representatives, was created in 2010 due to some redistricting, no other Democrat has earned more votes than David Brill did at 33%.
So in Congressional District 4, I have to say, Mike, you have probably the top 10 worst congressional people in the country in Mr. Gosar.
Yeah, we're talking about a guy whose family put out a video against him that he was literally had lost his mind. But the R in this state, it still means a lot. An R after his name meant more than David Brill's competence and his experience. But let's say, District 4 includes 7 out of 15 Arizona counties. 7 counties are in District 4. Brill got 83,000 votes. Again, more than in 2016, the candidate got 29%. Brill got 33%. In 2014, the Democratic candidate got 27%. So, the point is impact and increasing influence here of Democrats in Yavapai County.
I think that from the point of view of Sedona, the local election was a tsunami against the Tea Party in Sedona and all their little variations.
Well, the Sedona deserves congratulations also. Sedona voters, they too saw through, and this was a smoke and mirrors campaign. Your local stuff here with the fake budget thing, and it was a smoke and mirrors. It was a way to cut town government.
Now, the negative thing is that the attacks on our fire chief have led to him finding a job very quickly in Colorado.
Yeah.
So Chris Kazazian is moving on. He was very honest with people that he was applying for jobs, extremely talented guy that you want to keep around. And, of course, he found a job within a couple of months. So once he started looking. So that was negative. Where we didn't do well, Mike, was in defeating Sylvia Allen and Bob Thorpe, the statewide representatives that encompass they go down to Cottonwood, too, right?
And absolutely.
Yeah, and we just didn't get any closer than we've gotten before in defeating them.
Yeah, when it comes to patting ourselves on the back, it has to stop there.
Yeah.
The R after their name still means a lot. Bob Thorpe is a cipher. I mean, he never does anything, never shows up. I guess you can find him in his office sometimes if you're lucky. But he defeated, he won the election. Sylvia Allen has all sorts of corruption, as far as I'm concerned. She owns a charter school. She's a chairman of the education committee. Anything education is in Arizona is in part laid at Sylvia Allen's doorstep. Because and yet she won her election because of the R after her name.
So, turning, Mike, from our local situation where we've done really well in Arizona, and Democrats and progressives have done really well compared to how we usually do, where we went from no statewide offices to four statewide offices. We gained a congressional seat. We gained a Senate seat. And we got, as Mike is talking about, a higher vote for our candidates in extremely areas that are extremely Republican and conservative.
Well, it's important to remember that in Yavapai County, even though independents were registering like crazy, Democrats, there was 3,000 more Republicans in Yavapai County in 2018 than there was in 2016.
It's one of the most, it's the highest percentage of voters of any county in Arizona, and it's very conservative. Yavapai County.
The rest of the state, as I said, is divided pretty much 50-50. Yavapai County is still twice as many Republicans
right.
as Democrats.
Yeah. So moving from the local, Gary will be calling in just a few minutes. Let's talk a little bit about how the local election is reflected in the national discourse. We have Donald Trump, still president of the United States. The Republicans now have control of the Senate. The Democrats will have control in January of the House of Representatives by a fairly substantial number. It's hard to see how Democrats can get positive legislation through the Senate and through Donald Trump. It's easy to see how they can block the worst legislation.
Well, they're talking about the canon. They're talking about the subpoena canon, you know, something that shoots out things at a circus or a fair. We're talking 85 subpoenas is the number flying around Washington right now, and we're talking about everything from impeachment to investigating many of the things that have outraged all of us. In the last 2 years, are now subject to House investigation. And so those are the things that we're going to see primarily.
I think we've got Gary with us. Gary, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Well, Gary is calling in from Minnesota. You guys remember him as having been a regular on the show for several years. Gary does our website. And does a great job of it. And we wanted to ask him, because Gary is really good at researching statistics and stuff, what's going on, if he can see any patterns, and also what's happening in Minnesota.
So tell us what happened in Minnesota. Yeah, give us that first, please.
Well, first of all, you'll have to excuse me. I'm a little tired. I was out raking the forest over the weekend to prevent fires. So if I sound a little exhausted, that's what's going on.
Don't listen to this president, okay? I'm going to stop that right now. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Gary, I couldn't hear you. I turned my little mic, deal, so now I can hear that you're actually there. I kept talking because I thought, well, where the hell is he, you know?
He's been raking the forest. Go ahead, man. What happened in Minnesota? How do Democrats do?
Well, I was worried that I actually had more hope for Arizona than I did for Arizona or for Minnesota because of the deal with Franken being forced to resign and the attacks on Keith Ellison. But we did quite well. We took all of the statewide offices, governor, et cetera. We returned both Democratic senators to the U.S. Senate. We got rid of the Gosar-like clone in the district I live in. We got rid of Jason Lewis, who like Gosar, didn't live in our district and was a right-wing ideologue who never, in my experience, never once told the truth. And then Keith Ellison won a fairly contested race for the attorney general, despite a very heavy smear campaign against him. So we did well.
So all statewide offices in Minnesota went to Democrats: governors, attorney general, secretary of state.
Yep, we retook the Minnesota state house. The GOP still controls the state senate, and we kind of traded congressional districts. The GOP picked up a couple of rural districts, and the Democrats picked up some more suburban districts. So overall, it was good, but it really kind of shows you the rising division between rural and urban, I think, more right. than anything else.
Absolutely, and that's what we're. If we don't get to it today, that's one of the things we want to talk about, was this deep, deep political divide, and it's exactly what it is, Gary. It's rural and urban. We were talking about Portland before the show. The quick anecdote is, according to friends that live there, they are having confrontations every weekend. The Antifa and the neo-Nazis, for just throwing out some labels here, the Trump supporters and the rest of the reasonable world are having conflicts every weekend. The young, the 30s and 40-year-olds are in the streets having conflicts in Portland. We've seen Portlandia. We know it's this liberal nirvana. But they come in from the rural area just for the confrontation. We just saw in Philadelphia, they had a We the People rally. 30 Trump supporters show up, 300, I don't want to say Antifa. They were just
counter-demonstrators,
thank you, show up. Once again, it's a rural-urban divide. We see that here all the time. By the way, Cottonwood, if you want to consider Sedona urban, if you want to divide it this much, at least Sedona is full of former urban folks.
Let me ask you, Gary, and also Mike. A recent study shows that 60%, above 60% of the production of the country is done in blue congressional districts. And like something closer to 40% is done in red districts, and what this is a Brookings Institute report. I'm not a super follower of it, but these guys have analyzed it economically, and what it seems to be is whether you have advanced industries, you have urban centers, you have Democrats. Where you have a troubled and rural economy, you have Republicans. And so the productive area, the most productive areas in the United States are effectively controlled by this sort of permanent minority representation of rural areas. And we're not against rural people. I come from a rural area in Oklahoma. So what do you think, Gary?
Well, I think, one statistic that jumped out at me when I was researching it the other day is that that only 14% of the U.S. population lives in rural areas, which goes a long way to explaining that disparity in economics. And, you know, it depends on how you define rural, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, what's always troubled me for many years is when you look at the red versus blue map of the United States, you see this sea of red, but, you know, it's a very small percentage of the population that lives there. And you know, there's not only an economic divide, but there's an education divide. You know, there's many fewer people in rural areas have college degrees. And there's this belief that's persistent. I live in a rural area in Minnesota now, and I grew up in rural Iowa. There's this persistent belief that the urban elites are controlling, you know, everything. They're controlling my life. And I send my tax money to the state government and the federal government, and all those urban areas are using up all of my tax money, and I get nothing in return. But the reality is that it's exactly the opposite. The urban areas subsidize the rural areas for roads and schools and everything else. But there's just this persistent belief that for people living in rural areas that they're being taken advantage of by the urban elites, the minority groups, the immigrants that are coming in and using my tax dollars for food
tend to be darker skinned than the people in the rural areas. Yeah.
Well, that's it.
It's really a disturbing belief, I think.
Well, there's a 61% of Democrats believe Republicans are racist, sexist, and bigoted. And 31% of Republicans think the same of Democrats. There's no hope for a divide. We're talking about basic divisions here.
I'm wondering again, Gary, the Brookings, and of course is being done by economists, the report that I read. How much is this divide between red and blue from Democrats, Republicans, liberals, and conservatives? How much of it is driven by economic factors, the success of the urban areas, the success of the urban democratic areas, and their increasing domination over production in the United States versus the amount of production in rural areas? Is that how much is that contributing to this divide? Or, I mean, in other words, is there an economic base to it as well as everything else?
Well, for sure. The people living in rural areas, you know, where I grew up, I'm going there again for Thanksgiving. I go there fairly often. Small town Iowa. You know, there's not a lot of economic opportunities there. It's mostly, you know, small town retail and growing corporate farms. You know, the size of the the acreage of the farms is increasing, you know, by leaps and bounds every year. So you have these farmers that the large farmers that are making a lot of money. But very few other people, especially those in small town retail or those who have to commute to a large city to find a job that will pay them a decent wage. You know, some of the best paid people, believe it or not, in those areas are teachers, which, you know, given giving the funding of education in Arizona should give you a good idea of how depressed it can be.
Let's ask Klaus. Tester won in Montana, and there are not a lot of urban areas in Montana.
But there are the ones that are matter a lot.
Yeah. Right. Was Tester able to reach out to rural folks as well as the people living in the small cities at Dot?
Well, Montanans have a history for splitting their vote. Hey, Gary, by the way. There are a couple of well, there's one phenomenon that was really striking, which was the Native American vote. It's usually 30%, and through a lot of registration and efforts by tribal leaders, the turnout was 90%.
Holy crap!
And they all voted. They all voted for Tester. So the important factors that drive Democratic candidates used to be just the city of Missoula,
yeah,
where near where I live, but it's now also the Native Americans. I mean, if we keep that up, it's a very good omen.
That's great, because it was always the Helena-Missoula divide, and it was pretty much, I don't want to say 50-50, but certainly. But if you can get Missoula and the Native Americans, then Democrats have a winning combination there.
But if the government's now divided, everyone, and it's sort of stacked against Democrats. It's stacked against Democrats for non-conspiratorial reasons, just because the way that the government was set up 200 years ago, there were 3 million people in the United States. Now there are 330 million people. There were just 13 states originally, and now there are, 51, so forth and so on. Things have changed so greatly. Am I right?
50 states, aren't they?
They're still just 50, yeah.
Oh, they're just 50. Well, there, is my,
getting
my
ahead
Oklahoma
of
education.
Puerto Rico is, on.
It should be a state.
Yeah, it should be.
So should D.C., frankly.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. But so things have changed so much, and yet we add in gerrymandering, and we add in voter suppression, which is played big in both Florida and Georgia, where we had very strong candidates losing by just a few votes. We had in Georgia, I think, the Secretary of State, which manages the elections, was also running for governor.
We watched on television, on social media, we watched a white man steal an election from a black woman by suppressing the vote. The secretary, you understand how this works, folks. The Secretary of State was running for the office. He suppressed at least 100,000 votes, if not more, and won the office. And he knew exactly what, you understand. One of the things we can feel really, really, really good about in Arizona is that the attempts and the real voter suppression of Arizonans. We now have Katie Hobbs and the secretary. One of the ways to stop voter suppression, quite frankly, is to elect a Democrat to every Secretary of State's office nationwide. That may be the only way, because these guys aren't going to quit. When we're talking about this divide, we're talking about, and Steve, I know you're talking about this sort of, these political,
It worries me, Mike.
The machination, well, it should. The machinations of voter suppression, huge. And the gerrymandering.
It's now clear that one of our two, political parties in the country no longer believes in democracy.
That's absolutely correct.
It really is the truth.
Why there's not
do anything to win an election?
There should be pitchforks, and we're talking about a political party that doesn't believe in democracy. We're talking about the first thing I looked up when I started looking up researching for this show, I found the Republican Party is a criminal organization. The Republican Party as the biggest threat to democracy. I know you, but all of this, guys, we're talking about, and this is important, but what's behind all of this? And we're talking about the biggest phenomena in the society today, and that's social media. We're talking about a billion and a half subscribers on Facebook. We don't know what's happening to us. We don't know what's causing the divide, because it's all being manipulated. The New York Times published this great article on Facebook, explosive, talked about all over the media right now, but also it's an unknown phenomena.
I think there's a real decline, Mike, in pitchforks out there. I don't think most people know what a pitchfork looks like or have ever used one.
It was used by one of the one percenters, I think, talking about that the pitchforks were coming after them in the last
they
couple
have,
of years.
They're unfriendly looking things, Klaus.
Well, one of the things we haven't talked about is that, in my view, aren't the Republicans swimming against the Democratic demographic stream? Because in uh, what in less than 10 years, the four people who are sitting in this office will belong to a minority. And, white people will be a minority. And that will certainly have an impact on elections, even with gerrymandering.
Well, that's it. Some people feel that everything that the Republicans are doing, gerrymandering and voter suppression, is all about hanging on to power, white power, as long as they can, making as much money as they can for as long as they can. And this is why this New York, the whole Facebook thing, the deny, the delay about the Russian interference. What's coming out is, what did Zuckerberg know and when did he know it? And the New York Times says very clearly in a sentence all by its in a paragraph all by itself. The company feared Trump supporters. So we're talking about Antifa and neo-Nazis and Trump supporters having clashes in cities around the United States. But we're also talking about Silicon Valley. We're talking about Mark Zuckerberg being afraid of Republicans.
I think that's definitely true. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, there's a couple of things I wanted to point out that I think really speak to the divide. And one you can see in the your local newspaper, the Verde Independent, which I still read online. There's a letter to the editor from a guy from Rimrock that really is troubling, which says, well, there are a few decent people moving here to Arizona. I'm much more concerned about the caravan of people from back east and the non-citizens approaching in the south. I actually have something in common with those from the south. We need radical reform, no running for state office until you've been here for 10 years. This is Arizona, and it's for Arizonans. The state was founded by Indians, Mexicans, and Confederates. We are not like you. The other thing that I thought was, I found that really, I did encounter that a good bit when I was in Arizona. The other thing that stood out to me was a recent speech by Senator Mike Lee from Utah that they gave to the Federalist Society, in which he talks about the 50-50 split. It's nowhere near 50-50. The Democrats are far larger. But he talks about the divide and says that violence is inevitable unless we do away with federalism. And he wants to do away with funding for the internet, our interstate highway system, do away with funding for K-12 education, federal higher education accreditation, early childhood education, Department of Commerce, the federal housing policy, the workforce regulation, and the glut of federally owned land. And one of the things that he says that he believes that federal child labor laws, Social Security, and Medicare are unconstitutional. And what's disturbing is he says this in a very, upscale, very, seemingly intellectual way, but it is, I think, encompasses the feeling on the right that we're going to have to be dealing with.
It's the old states' rights things. It gets revived, really, I have to say, when Lyndon Johnson begins to do anti-discrimination stuff back in the 60s. And then you have a revival of the states' rights thing, which was the old southern battle flag, intellectual battle flag, states' rights. And what it sounds like Lee is doing is advocating going back to the Articles of Confederacy, and they didn't work, which is why we have a federal system. I think that a lot of it was anger at the Supreme Court back in the 60s, which said, Roe versus Wade. Also, the rulings on discrimination said you couldn't discriminate. I think that really revived this anti-federalist government, which of which he sounds like one of the most extreme advocates, but not the only advocate in the Republican Party. It would profoundly change the American system. It would make the United States, I think, a much, much weaker and disorganized country. So what he's saying is, look, we can't agree on anything, so let's divide everything up, and some states will go blue and some states will go red. And I think that's a really bad idea. I think we're all, you know, in America together.
Let's do predictions. Last 5 minutes here. What's going to happen? What's going to happen with a Democratic House, Gary? We'll start with you since you're the furthest away, and then we'll go to Klaus since he's the oldest. I want some predictions here. I want to know what's going to. Are we all going to be saved by the Democrats? Going to come in and ride on a white horse here and save us all from Trump?
Well, I think that the biggest, you know, or the best way to describe it is that they're going to be a check on the Trump administration. I think there'll be a whole lot of investigations into violations of the Emoluments Clause and a number of other, you know, a lot of the corruption that's taken place in the administration. And I think, you know, everybody talking about the impeachment, I don't think that's likely. I think it's going to be a number of investigations, and you know, they now control the purse strings. So
all right, last question.
Puts them in a very strong position.
Will we waste time on impeachment?
I sure hope not.
I don't think so.
You should hope not. Okay. Klaus, what's going to happen?
Well, actually, I mean, Gary said pretty much what I was going to say. I don't think...
what he said.
I don't think there'll be impeachment because it would be a waste of time and it would just further divide the country and it would be pointless. My hope is that, you know, that we keep the Democratic leadership because Nancy Pelosi... For whatever, she's been demonized by the Republicans.
Is that Republican demonization, or are there Democrats that are throwing her under the bus?
No, I think it's Democrats throwing her under the bus because of the Republican demonization.
Okay,
but
yeah.
She is still the smartest and most qualified person to lead the House.
I guess I would agree with both those people. What we have now is a check on Trump. In the government. What we don't have is the ability to do any positive information. I do want to thank Democratic Perspectives contributors. We'd love to get regular contributions. If you can give us $25 or $50 a month, we're a couple of hundred, $300 behind what we lose each month. And so we have to do fundraising constantly.
Please, please, please go to the website. You can donate there. Go to the website, vvid.org. You can find this show and all the shows, but I want my prediction in. I predict that Silicon Valley and the Democrats are going to divide over social media. Democrats are calling for limiting free speech on social media, so there's going to be a big divide between Silicon Valley and the Democrats, although Silicon Valley was too Republican anyway. Go to vvid.org. Democratic Perspective has all of its shows, including this show, in a few days. And we have Gary LeMaster, who writes up these wonderful little summaries. You can read this stuff at vvid.org. We need donations. We need to keep the show on the air. We believe that here in Little Sedona, Arizona, Democratic Perspective has an important voice. We reach an audience that, quite frankly, nobody else can reach. So, our legions of fans, that down at Cactus Gates are still hooking me up with drinks, and that's really all that matters. Steve?
I just wanted to thank people, Mike.
Oh, good idea.
The people who are supporting us, our regular donors and other donors.
Democrats
really
of the Red Rocks.
Appreciate the support.
That's right. Democrats at Red Rocks have always been there for us, and thanks, folks. See you next time.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.